Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my god, that's a giraffe!
Sir, you can't keep that giraffe here.
Hey!
We'll get back to that in a little bit. This is V-Spot. I'm your host, Dr. Vic Tater, and I've got Neil with me right now. How you doing, Neil?
Hey.
And we got the Pose Down himself, the Pose Down Pose Man himself. He's going to be stopping in. We're going to be rapping about X-Men. Any minute now, if he gets in, no one makes a fool of Dr. Vic Tater. Besides the life and most women I've ever dated or pursued, and probably my parents or friends that I've had faith in, like Neil. So on Sunday, or maybe on the 11th, I'm going to be talking to Jerry Conway again. Jerry Conway created Firestorm. He worked on Justice League of America, Avengers, probably every Marvel book in the 70s. He probably passed by at least once. I think the only thing he ever took a swing at was X-Men, so we're going to be looking forward to that. I'm reading Firestorm right now. That's actually probably one of the best DC books, non-team books they had going at the time. We're going to be talking about the X-Men show if Mr. Posen decides to turn in. Let me send him a friendly reminder. Get out of here! And we are into the... Is this the second week of the draft project?
Are you talking about actually officially doing anything with it, not just talking about it?
Having it actually started.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, if you're enjoying these, check them out. Oh, here's Eric himself. Let me click that again.
I already did.
Okay, hey, Eric.
Hello?
Oh, there he is.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey. Okay, so the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah, well, anyway, I decided to watch that on Netflix because, for some reason, some of the 90s Marvel cartoons left Netflix.
Yeah.
And
they're all pretty much on YouTube also, anyway.
Yeah, I didn't really understand the logic of what leaves Netflix and what doesn't.
Yeah.
Something about Disney, Marvel, or whoever basically said, yeah, we don't want this, or it's too much, or not worth it enough.
Right,
I always wonder about that. Like, some shows are pretty much all on YouTube and no one seems to care. Like the X-Men cartoon.
Disney's actually not that, knock on wood, but as evil corporate overlords go, Disney's not that bad.
It's not Warner Brothers.
In that way.
Yeah, they're not dickheads. They're not complete dickheads like Warner Brothers. You could put stuff up on YouTube, and they're not going to just pull it down for no reason.
Well, Disney. Eisner Disney probably would not even put anything on Netflix.
It's hard to say. They're kind of like WWE, probably closer, because WWE actually has a stream of stuff on Netflix, and they tend to leave stuff alone on YouTube as long as the Connecticut Democratic Party isn't trying to use it for dirt.
Yeah.
They're pretty cool, mainly. And I was probably at the point I turned against the Connecticut Democratic Party. It's like, God damn you, you're cutting me off my violent smut. Now, back to the X-Men cartoon. Eric, you're a couple of years younger than us, aren't you?
Yeah, like a little. Slightly.
Yeah, how old are you? You're like 29?
30. Just turned 30.
Okay, so you're like two. Well, the X-Men cartoon started in 1992, and I can remember it was weird when it started because X-Men were such a non-entity as far as pop culture goes at the time. The comics were remarkably popular, but they had not really made a dent in the mainstream.
Yeah, for me, the opposite.
After the cartoon.
Yeah,
right.
I really got into comics from the cartoon.
Well, I'll tell you, I was reading comics a couple of years before, like 91, and I'd gotten a Spider-Man comic, and I was really excited about it. And then I got an X-Men comic, and it was so hard to get into and understand, I never even looked at X-Men again for about 9 years.
Was this the year that they brought up the new X-Men number one? Was it 92?
Like a year afterwards. Like you were like maybe a year or 2 years somewhere in that time period. The X-Men one was like 91, and the cartoon started in what, fall of 92 or 93, one of those years.
Yeah, the main thing I remember was I know it wasn't a Claremont issue, because Claremont, for everything he would do, it doesn't matter if it's in the middle of a storyline, he really tried to make sure the readers got caught up, where at least you had a fighting chance of understanding what was going on. But the TV show started, and, you know, the thing about it is, looking back on it now, the animation in the pilot was terrible.
Yeah.
And this,
especially
and this is the cleaned up version.
First one they saw, especially the first version they showed on TV.
Right, and I mean, even the one that made it to DVD still doesn't look good.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you could tell they were really trying for something that was different. And one thing that I appreciate now, they really made sure the characters looked like the characters.
Yeah.
As far as any X-Men property outside the comics goes, this one looked the most like the X-Men. There was no compromises. They looked exactly like they did in the comic. And even up to season 3 when they did the Phoenix stuff, they kept those Dave Cockrum designs for the Shi'ar. Like, the Ken never got an updated costume, so he looked exactly like he did in the comics.
Yes. Doesn't they have the Jim Lee costumes? That's ironic. They actually have the Jim Lee costumes longer than they last in the comics, probably for some characters.
I think the Jim Lee costumes stuck around for a while. Like with Rogue, I think Rogue kept her Jim Lee costume until about 98. And I think Jean Grey, they put Jean Grey back in the Phoenix costume around 98 for a time, just because I think somebody realized, why the hell aren't we using this costume?
Probably the best costume anyway, Jim Lee era.
Yeah, it's like, I don't understand, like, I think they feel like, why aren't we using the Phoenix costume? Now, mind you, at Marvel right now, they still have not gotten rid of Kitty Cat Beast. Nobody likes this look. I've not heard one person say, man, that Cat Beast, that's a great look. And, you know, Beast has two classic looks, and that's not one of them.
Yeah. I would say that Jean is probably, with the exception of obviously the Phoenix Saga, probably worst character in the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, they didn't know what to do with
her. Yeah, I think she was in the last-minute addition. I'm not sure if I even know what she was when I first started watching the show. Like, was she like a maid or something?
Well, you know, there was kind of some problems with Jean because, again, the show really tried to capture the comics. And the problem with Jean in that vintage is, without her backstory in that time, there's not a lot you can do with her. She has the same powers as the Professor, but not as powerful. You know, it seemed like she only existed for Wolverine.
Yeah, she's the only one that didn't have a code name. And the first couple of episodes, she's basically just hanging out with the Professor, so maybe I thought like maybe she's the major with powers.
Yeah, like
the Morlock episode, then the Morlock episode, you realize that she actually is an X-Men, and she's dating Cyclops, and Wolverine's in love with her.
It's funny because they put a lot of emphasis on like their new character Morph. Victor, do your Morph laugh.
Morph is technically not a new character. Morph was based on a character from the 60s X-Men comics called Changeling.
Yes.
Yeah, just without the awesome costume. And again, they killed him in the pilot episode.
Yeah, that's what got me interested in the show, probably.
Yeah, you know, one of the funny things is about Wolverine's pining after Jean, you know, and the thing is, when you know Wolverine, you realize he would not have been happy with her.
Especially in that cartoon scene.
Probably
the most
melodramatic
sounding voice.
Yeah, I like how when he would look at her picture, he apparently could only get a picture of Jean with Cyclops. And I like to picture Jean being very clueless and, oh, here, Logan, here's a picture of me. The thing I like about Cyclops in the show is that basically Cyclops is a crusty old Dean.
That's right. I like to joke about Wolverine. No, the idea that Jean Grey's psychic, yet for some reason she can't see something right in front of her.
Yeah. Oh, I have to get back to Scott. You know, I think Jean, for me, probably the one best episode she had as a character was probably the Morlock Christmas episode, which she's arguing with Gambit in the kitchen.
Yeah, she showed some personality there outside of being Phoenix there.
They
have my kitchen occasion.
He's like, oh, I'm going to go food with spice. And he was like this. He said, here, let me put some cayenne pepper in there. Do it and you'll lose those hands. Which, mind you, that's the most emotion she showed. She showed more emotion there than she did during the entire Phoenix saga.
Yes. And when she's not being the Phoenix, she passes out a lot when she does use her powers. It makes the same sound when she falls down. It was like, ugh.
Yeah. It's funny because you have this team of X-Men, and they're trying to do the Phoenix saga, and one of the things was they had to write Rogue out of the episode.
Yeah, I know.
Because if you have Rogue around, there would be no reason for Jean to do that.
Let's say Rogue's on vacation.
Yeah, they said Rogue's on a mission. They never mentioned what the mission was. Of course, you know, I kind of miss the innocence of childhood at times when it comes to Rogue and Gambit, because at the time I was like, oh, that's so sad. And as an adult, I'm thinking, I wonder if they gave each other hand jobs. That's terrible.
I just envisioned that she has to say the whole no glove, no love to it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it just makes me feel terrible.
Now, do you want to talk about how much you hate Jubilee in the show and basically in general?
I hate Jubilee in the comics. She's actually more bearable. In the cartoon, she's a lovable, over-anxious kid that just gets her ass kicked a lot.
I really, the show started, I didn't really hate her because, you know, I was like, she was my entry into the X-Men. But, I don't know. She's a little annoying.
The thing is, Pride did that. Basically, it's the reader analog, and also help everyone tell everyone what everything does.
Well, she was kind of created as the anti Kitty, and Eric, my guess is you probably came in around the time of X-Men number one.
Yeah,
and around
that time.
Okay, they really toned down Kitty around there. Like, they really toned her down to where she's more in the background and more of just an innocent kid. Before that, she was, like, the most pain in the ass. Like, she would just go around talking to people, and you just had to wonder how she made it that long without someone knocking the piss out of her.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I can understand why these foster families kept sending her back.
Yeah. I really like what she's doing there.
I can't remember the name of the O. Henry story, but there's one where kidnappers stole a kid, and the kid was so obnoxious and annoying, they just brought it back to the family.
Yeah, like I said, well, for a time, it was just her and Wolverine in the comic, you know, because there was a period before Jim Lee came on and it kind of ruined everything, that basically the book was very splintered. Like, there was only, you know... Like,
yeah, I know.
You could not really have the full team for some issues.
After the Australian, they had that thing where the X-Men were all around the world or something. After that thing in Australia that I can't remember the name of now. The Siege something. Whatever.
The Siege Perilous. And,
yeah, the Siege Perilous. And then it was just Wolverine. And
how many X-Men books did they have at this time? Like Excalibur, X-Factor, and all that?
One.
New Mutants?
They revealed all the other ones. Yeah, there was three if you counted those, and I think Wolverine eventually got his own book around that time.
Yeah, like around 88 or something.
Yeah, and let me stress this again. Marvel, when they got rid of Claremont, really killed the Golden Goose. And basically what they did was, imagine if you had a Golden Goose and you killed it for its latest egg.
Yeah.
You know, they never quite got that. You know, Claremont could make more Jim Lee. You know, and that's not to diminish what the artist did on the book, you know, but Claremont was the one cultivating the book, and he was the one hunting these artists down. Like, he discovered Paul Smith. He found Jim Lee, Mark Silversido. You know, he would even pay the colorist, he would even give the colorist a split of his royalties. And the letterer, to make sure they were happy. Yeah, he would give them money, you know, just to make sure they were happy, because technically they weren't a part of the royalty program.
I'm afraid that's how much letter they got paid. Especially back in that day.
Yeah, because he picked up letterer himself, the colorist, you know, I mean, he put a lot of work into that book, beyond just the writing. Now, going back to the cartoon for a moment, especially the first season, there were so many delays on that first season.
Yeah, I know. It was a long time between episodes and some embarrassing errors. Then they have a thing where after an episode they came back to see that the school was destroyed, but it wasn't destroyed. Did that really happen?
I don't think it did. I know there was one when Juggernaut destroyed the school, but I know in the next episode they were still kind of rebuilding. Or I think the school was kind of put back together, and they kind of mentioned in one of those dialogue bits overlay where they basically mentioned they'd rebuilt.
Yeah, I think what was that? Is that the Juggernaut episode was supposed to air first, and then they did the, and then they would do the two-part Apocalypse episode. But for some reason, they had to do the first part of the Apocalypse episode first, where they're talking about the Juggernaut destroying the school, and then they aired the Juggernaut episode. And I was a kid, I was like,
yeah,
what's going on? Did I miss an episode?
Yeah, they would really play pretty fast and loose with continuity. So, like, in the episode with Mystique and Rogue, they made it look like they didn't even know each other, so they had to do some fancy footwork just to say that she knew Mystique had another identity.
They still can't figure out if Archangel Angel was an original X-Men or not.
If you watch his first appearance, they really act like they've never seen this guy before. Then later, Cyclops seems to be familiar with him just because he's riding his ass.
And then they have flashbacks where he's in the original X-Men. But then in that four-parter where Archangel appears again in that Beyond Good and Evil, Shard was like, it's Archangel, destined to be an X-Men.
Which I guess you could probably explain that as the guy with the metal wings, you know, they didn't recognize him. Actually, I think Shard would probably make my list of the lamest X people.
I remember when her hologram was a member of X Factor.
Yeah, it's like
remember
that one right
that?
There. Yeah, actually I do, because I remember I was kind of reading the book at the time, which it was pretty good. It was one of the X Factor was a fairly
strange lineup. It was like,
of course, I'm guessing.
Carlos, Saber, Polaris, Sabretooth, Mystique, Wildchild, Hologram of Shard. That's your team.
Oh, yeah, the second season had the Friends of Humanity, which is one of the lamest groups. You know, because especially today, you just picture me on talk radio. I mean, they seem like the people that would be defending George Zimmerman in comment threads online.
Yeah, well, Drayden Creed seems very similar to Glenn Beck sometimes.
Well, you know, the thing about Drayden Creed is, you know, and they never really give him this. They do this in comics. They never really use that character to what he could do as his potential, just because, you know, Drayden Creed actually has a legitimate reason to hate mutants. Or at least when you hear his backstory, you're like, oh, I get that.
He's always like, the mutants, we must eliminate them.
Yeah,
I'm
just going
to listen to him and talk radio. Well, I mean, some people would, but...
You know, like, Sabretooth was his dad and Mystique was his mom. Actually, I like that episode how Wolverine was kind of doing detective work. It was like, Creed,
yes.
I think I used to work with your dad.
Then
oh,
he freaks out.
Where? Kentucky. Oh, no, my family was in Canada, so was I.
Yes, that was mine, bud. That's my imitation.
And then the Friends of Humanity ended up dropping him off in Canada, and Sabretooth was waiting for him.
Yes, and then I just saw on YouTube the episode from, was it the fifth season, or where it may have been delayed, I think, when the second Nightcrawler one where Drayden Creed kidnaps them all. Rogue and Mystique and Nightcrawler.
Have you ever heard the story of what Chris Claremont intended Nightcrawler's origin to be?
Probably better than what Chuck Austin did.
Okay. Basically, Mystique was going to be his dad, and Destiny was her mother. It was his mother.
Yeah, I don't know if the 80s, they were ready for that.
Yeah, they did not. That got vetoed very fast in the 80s, which, you know, it would have been more interesting whatever they ended up doing. He actually foreshadowed that really well, just because they had this moment where Mystique was training, you know, in Arcade's Danger Room thing, and he had killed Rogue, and she killed Rogue, and then when it came time to kill Nightcrawler, she couldn't pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And that was about all they did, just the idea that she said she couldn't kill Nightcrawler.
And then I think it was actually a long time until they officially said Mystique was his mother.
Yeah.
Was that until the 90s?
They finally revealed the connection in the issue of X-Men Unlimited. I can't remember who wrote that comic. Of course, again, they kept Creighton Creed as being a loudmouth buffoon. And eventually you kind of feel bad for him because, you know, Sabretooth obviously doesn't give a shit about him. And then Mystique goes ahead and kills him anyway. He doesn't seem to feel any remorse about it.
Yes.
I think that was
but Nightcrawler seems like him in the cartoon.
Yeah, Nightcrawler was the only person who ever seemed to actually give a shit about him.
That would be good fan fiction. After that episode airs, Nightcrawler and Green Tree trying to be brothers.
Just bringing him home for dinner.
And Nightcrawler tries to teach Graydon Creed to not be a melodramatic villain every 5 seconds.
Well, you know,
so it's like, pizza's late, it's because of the mutants. We must destroy them all.
Well, you know, it occurs to me that if Graydon Creed had mutants for parents and he doesn't have powers, doesn't that make him a mutant? Yes, because they always say that if a child now it's interesting how Wolverine went through a couple of origins and they ended up using the worst possible one in the comic. Because originally Sabretooth was supposed to be his dad, which made sense, and it would have actually explained there was this moment in X-Men 100 where one of the Sentinels couldn't read Wolverine. They just said he wasn't a mutant. That was all they said. Which, technically, if Sabretooth had been his dad, that would have explained it.
Why? Because?
Basically, that if a mutant has the same powers as the parent, it's not a mutant. It bred true.
I heard all those rumors of Sabretooth was his dad. I heard that in the schoolyard rumors.
Yeah, another origin.
Like the same rumors that said the Ultimate Warrior was dead.
Yeah, another origin they were going to do was that Wolverine was a mutated Wolverine created by the High Evolutionary.
I haven't heard that.
That was apparently vetoed by Stan Lee himself. The show actually did do a lot of ambitious things, though, later. Like, they would, the idea they did an entire episode about belief in God versus atheism, and in the end, though, they never really took a definitive position. They just kind of went with the idea that, you know, it gives the Nightcrawler, and it gives people like Nightcrawler Wolverine comfort. And Gambit just kind of said, oh, fuck all this shit, it's Randall.
And they also had an episode that was basically just about Magneto and Quicksilver the Scarlet Witch, which featured the High Evolutionary and, of course, Bova, the cow. The talking cow.
Actually, I wanted to mention this, the fact that, you know, in the TV show, everybody treats Magneto like he's this horrible villain, and, you know, he never really does anything villainous. You know, like, he broke
well,
a
he does
tank.
Kind of tend to try to murder the X-Men most of the episodes before he turns good in the end.
Yeah, but, well, even when he would attack them, you know, he would never actually go all out. Now, he did try to fire some missiles in his first appearance.
Yeah, but no one's
but,
perfect.
You know, but if you compare it to what the comics Magneto did, you know, he's just this nice old guy that likes to tie up tanks once in a while.
Yeah. Yeah, compared to almost besides the 1980s, Chris Claremont, but Magneto, X-Men cartoon Magneto is pretty much more innocent than any other kind of Magneto.
Yeah, because if you go through there, you know, he did a bunch of bad, like, especially if you go by from Lee Kirby up until X-Men 150, you know, that Magneto was a seriously bad guy.
I mean, it's hard to even think of that as the same character. It was just a guy named Magneto who hates humans, who has mutant power, who's very powerful. They didn't even take his helmet off almost the whole X-Men series, right?
Which one, the cartoon?
The original series. The original five.
He didn't take off his helmet until the Neil Adams run.
Yeah.
And I think someone mentioned, you know, I heard a few people tell, like, John Byrne mentioned one time, they thought Neil Adams actually made Magneto too handsome. That if you look at Magneto in the Lee and Kirby issues, he looks like a fairly ugly man underneath that helmet.
But does it differentiate from Dr. Doom, who had all the messed up face?
Yeah. Well, the thing with Magneto when he was created is that they were basically trying to do an anti-Dr. Doom. That Magneto wasn't particularly noble. Of course, my belief about Magneto is that you get the feeling he does want to protect mutants, but mainly he just wants to be in charge.
Yeah.
Like, never get the feeling that, do you get the feeling if Magneto was given a choice between all mutants being protected and free, but he wouldn't be in charge, and the other option being he'd be in charge, but mutants would still be persecuted? I get the feeling he would take the second option every time.
He is definitely very dramatic. Like that last episode when he's like, you have to help, when Wolverine and Jean and Cyclops are like, you have to help the professor, and then Magneto's like, but I have been waiting my whole life for this.
Yeah.
The time is now.
Oh, yeah.
With one word, they will take over.
Another thing was that you had Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch hating Magneto, and they really didn't have a reason to hate him.
Other than that he's Magneto, I guess. They know who he is.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like in the comics, they had a reason. Yeah, like in the comics, they had a reason because Magneto was a huge dickhead to them in Brotherhood. And, you know, and in the comics, they're like this. I always like how on TV shows, if somebody finds out a parent, you know, like they'll find out father took some, like, you remember on Dallas how, you know, I can't remember the guy's name now. Harrison?
James Beaumont.
Harris Ryland. Yeah, you remember how Harris Ryland took his daughter, and she automatically took his side. Like, not once did she question the mother, like, wait, how come you took me? You know, and in this case, you know, they're like, they automatically just blame Magneto.
Poor Magneto.
You know, it's like this huge leap in logic to, okay, our mother took us from Magneto, our mother died, Magneto killed her!
Do we want to talk about the Capcom fighting games based on the cartoon?
Yeah, I only played Children of the Atom a couple of times.
Oh. Well, the funny thing is, X-Men wasn't really popular in Japan until basically the animated cartoon got over there with its kick-ass theme songs.
Yes, I've seen the theme song on YouTube.
Yeah, but basically,
they
were able to basically just start the whole Marvel vs. Capcom series just because of the first game.
It goes back again, though, that X-Men were kind of non-entity in pop culture until the cartoon came on.
Yes,
now, they had the arcade game.
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
I think I know who Wolverine was. But that's probably because of his NES game, as Lord Alfred Hayes used to talk about. Wolverine,
playing. Yeah, the LPN ones.
I probably know who Wolverine was.
I like when, you know, there are so many things that Lord Alfred Hayes announced that you would not expect to hear such a dignified voice like his, like, the Maverick Hunters are back on the loose in Mega Man X2.
There really needs to be a YouTube compilation of him talking up Mega Man and various video games.
Or combos. Cheddar cheese and pretzel rolled into one. Combos.
Oh, yeah.
Combos.
Oh, yeah. The fact that technically, this isn't actually X-Men, but basically due to all the Versus stuff and the popularity, that technically the only reason Shuma Garoff became a new hit now is just because of the Capcom fighters.
I've always wondered how they picked who to put in these games, because Shuma Garoff was a character. Okay, first of all, it was a character in an old Conan story that was mentioned as an elder god and was eventually
put
into a Doctor Strange comic. Yeah, it was used in Doctor Strange as a villain.
They said they basically just gave him, like, the, what do they call those ones that have all the info? You have the collections of the, like, secrets of the Marvel Universe. All the sheets.
Yeah,
all the,
oh, you mean the
handbook.
Sheets.
Yeah,
you mean the handbook
of
the Marvel Universe?
They just said, oh, this is different. This isn't just a superhero. Because Children of Atom is basically picked directly from the cartoon. That's why we have, like, Spiral or something in it.
To mention something else in the cartoon, there was this one filler episode that had Cyclops, where he went to Arizona to see this doctor that had helped him when he was younger.
Yeah, that was
and
so strange.
Yeah, it had been taken over by evil mutants. The leader was Solar, and the thing is, if you look up Solar, Solar was a one-time Iron Fist villain and Captain America villain. He got killed in, like, his second appearance.
This is running out of X-Men characters. Like, here's another. Here's someone else that's kind of fitting here.
There's,
got powers.
There seemed to be, I got the feeling there was kind of a listlessness to the show after the Phoenix stuff that they didn't know what else to do.
How many episodes of Silver Samurai was in the cartoon?
He was only in one episode.
Okay, but he was able to make it into the game, or the fucking game.
And I should mention I didn't watch Jubilee's Fairy Tale.
Oh, God, that one.
I watched that for about 5 minutes. I said, fuck it, I'm not watching it. I didn't even particularly care for the comic it was based on. I had Dave Cockermore.
No, tell him about the Proteus two-parter about Wolverine.
Eric, have you seen the Proteus episode recently?
Not recently, but I think I remember it recently. Wolverine gets scared.
Like Wolverine, which if you see what he did to Wolverine, you kind of get why he was scared. Anyway, it had these epic moments of cowardice from Wolverine. Like Wolverine.
In the episode. And then just backing away and running.
Yeah, and again, based on the comic. Oh, hello, Connor. I love you too, buddy. Here, head back in the bedroom. I mean, living room. Oh, that was King of Cartoons. The interesting thing about that, because if you look at the comics, it was a very different story, just because you had a different team, they just changed so many elements, I don't even understand why they even tried to follow the story as much as they did.
Yes.
And they left
I still think it's generally a good episode. I mean, the comic story is much better, obviously. It's one of the best X-Men stories probably, like, ever, but I think I remember the episode as being okay.
They had some pretty good episode. Yeah, if you don't have anything to compare it to directly. And again, I just appreciate the fact they try to be as faithful as they could.
My standards of practice, basically.
Now, do you remember the episode Weapon X Lies in Videotape?
Yeah.
There's this one point when Beast is up there and he's learning about the false memories, and Beast says, a lie mixed with truth is ever the most vicious lie, Tennyson. And I just want Sabretooth to say, it's that Tennyson guy! He did this! Let's kill him!
That makes sense.
Sabretooth's gonna kill a dead philosopher again.
I would like to just yell at Beast when he keeps on doing that. Like, at the end of that Quicksilver Scarlet Witch episode, and Beast says some comforting words to Magneto or something about his relationship with his kids, and I would love Magneto would be like, shut up, McCoy. We don't have this kind of relationship.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm usually your enemy.
I like how he'd be like, Magneto, if you need to talk, what's wrong, Magneto, Magnus? First of all, I don't know you well enough to go by call me by that name. Second of all, I don't know you well enough to get into this. I like how at the end of the Phalanx episode, Quicksilver hugs Magneto. It's like Quicksilver's just been through a fucking ordeal.
Yeah.
You know, my big problem with the way Quicksilver was designed was they made him way too muscular.
I guess in the 90s, everyone was muscular in comics.
Yeah, it's like you see the comics, Joe, because Quicksilver was always supposed to have kind of a lean runner's physique. And here he's just all, completely beefcake. Oh, and we didn't mention this, but, Cyclops never finds out Havok is his brother.
And then Rip finds out that Cable is his son in the future. I guess
yeah,
like, that would be too weird if they got into that. I know they had Gene say something like, was it Gene looking to like, Cyclops, this person is important to the future, our future, then you'll ever know or whatever.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, they hadn't introduced the baby yet. Yeah, they hadn't, but I like the fact with Havoc, it's like, huh, look at this blonde guy. He's immune to my powers. He kind of looks like me, and he has blonde hair like my baby brother that I vaguely remember. I'll figure it
I
out
love
later.
That, yeah. I love that even in that episode, people can't really figure out how to pronounce Havoc. So I'm pretty sure that Iceman episode, Polaris was like, Havoc, and Forge was like, this is Havoc.
Yeah, you know what occurred, and another thing to mention is, if you ever see Bishop showing up, it's bad news. You know, Cable might show up to, I mean, I honestly think Cable might show up to visit once in a while. You know, at least the train or something, but if it's Bishop, it's like, oh, shit, who's going to die? Oh, God, the last few episodes, the animation was just, I mean, I'm not an animation queen or anything, and by that term, I usually mean people that are just kind of sitting, when I use that term, I typically, do you remember the Buddy Cole sketch from Kids in the Hall?
Yeah.
Okay, you know, that's what I picture with people like that, where they're just shitting on everything from a stool or something. That's usually what I mean by that, but the animation was just terrible here. Even while the writing was pretty decent, except for the Captain America episode. That was the worst episode of the show, by the way. It might be as bad as Kitty's Fairy Tale. Well, I mean, Jubilee's Fairy Tale.
Yeah, I haven't actually, besides the last episode, I haven't actually seen the last five ones. The other four that many times.
Yeah, the writing's pretty good.
I've seen the last episode probably lots of times.
Fabian Cortez was actually killed in his last appearance.
Yeah, what does he do? What happens to him again? He.
But yeah,
that act of cowardice too when they were on the Asteroid M. That two-parter.
Yeah, Magneto came back, and Fabian Cortez is crawling away in fear. The thing I remember, though, about that Apocalypse episode where he's trying to take Jubilee's body is that I guess the animators decided to let Jubilee blossom in a year. Because she had a mighty fine rack.
Yeah, so I guess it's been a while since the first episode, even in that timeline.
Yeah, but the last scene was basically Apocalypse. Fabian Cortez is apologizing that he couldn't find Apocalypse, the host body, and Apocalypse like, oh, but you have. And that was the last time we saw him. Oh, and Mr. Sinister running right away in the Phalanx episode.
Yeah. All of his magical, all his powers, the guy who's apparently been alive for centuries and used to be pals with Jack the Ripper or something, and he's like, I'm just walking, running away. Don't look at me.
Yeah, he just ran. Yeah, he just ran because Cyclops is like, where's Sinister?
Oh, there he goes, running away.
Yeah, it's running
How
away.
How long do you think
he's
running
Cyclops.
For? Like, was he going into a car or something, or is he just, like, running down the street?
I said it's feeling like
hey,
he
is that Mr. Sinister running down
door.
The street?
I imagine he probably just ran until he found a sewer to jump into. They did one episode that was based in Victorian England with Nathaniel Essex and Charles Xavier's ancestor.
Yeah, that's kind of episode you can only do in the last season.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about it was is that Xavier's ancestor was kind of a Bible thumper than when it gets Darwin. And Mr. Sinister supported Darwin until Darwin saw his research and was like, what the hell is this shit? Sinister's like, it's what you promoted. Hey, I said a monkey might turn into a person in 1,000 years. This shit is fucked up. You know, Sinister was devastated by this. Because, you know, like he was torturing circus freaks in his attic. Yeah, by the way, that was my impression of Charles Darwin being upset at something.
So, know, some episodes they were only making last season, like that one, the one with Bova. I'm calling the episode the one with Bova.
So that was actually the season finale of season 4.
Yeah.
Now I get the feeling the 4-parter was actually intended to be a series finale. And
I think it was.
I do remember that when Gene got kidnapped after the second wedding, I'm like, yo, Gene, Scott, have you considered living in sin?
The only thing I didn't like when I first saw the episode is that clearly Morph is there. There's Morph at the wedding. They show him, but he doesn't say or do anything. And I want to know what Morph's thinking about all this, about Mr. Sinister coming back and Gene being kidnapped.
Well, you got to remember, Morph has a serious case of post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, that's why I was worried about him. I was worried the kid for him. He was probably having issues. And, like, Professor Jubilee told the guests to leave. So she's probably talking to Morph, and Morph's like, I know what's really going on. The Sentinels are here again, aren't they?
Well, the funny thing was that when you saw Morph in the episode, when he came back, he's fighting the Sentinels, and he's doing things like turning into Omega Red and using the coils. He's turning into Sasquatch and ripping off Sentinel's heads, and I'm thinking, why the fuck did you do that in the first place? It was like a Pokemon movie that me and Neil watched. Me and Neil were watching this Pokemon movie. This guy's standing in the background, okay, and all of a sudden this monster's Pokemon attacks, and this guy throws that Alakazam, and I said, you had a fucking Alakazam this entire time?
Yeah, it's kind of like on Power Rangers. Why don't they just go into the Megazord and start and just squash the villain, squash the monster before Rita makes it big?
They tried that on Green Ranger and he kicked the Megazord's ass. I think it's kind of like one of those things where you want to ask out somebody, you know, but you're afraid they'll turn you down. And it's one of those cases where if you ask out somebody really beautiful, you're like, you know, I could live with being turned down by them, you know. But in this case, it's like, I don't think my ego could take that type of pounding. No, because what happens if you come to the Megazord and still kicks your ass? Okay, we're probably going to go out in about a minute or two. One thing I wanted to mention was the Omega Red episode in the last season. That was a really strong episode.
I don't think I've seen that in a while. It was something about a submarine, I think.
Yeah, the U.S. military being dickheads and idiots. Just because he starts laughing because he explained to him that the nitrous caplet in him couldn't kill him anyway. Okay, yeah. Eric, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
All right. And on Sunday, I'll be talking to Jerry Conway about Firestorm and his upcoming project. Good night, everybody.